What about the decision in terms of sphincter preservation? How often do you see patients who are coming in for a second opinion who've been told they're not going to be able to have their sphincter spared and you tell them they do and do it?
Often. Or often patients come because they're told, if you want your sphincter spared, you'd better go to this place and see Steve Wexner at Cleveland Clinic. Otherwise, some patients do come later on with a recurrence or for some other reason, peristomal hernia, and you look at the path report and there is an 8-centimeter margin to the dentate line, but they had an abdominal perineal excision. It can happen. I think most surgeons are aware of what should and shouldn't be subject or who should and shouldn't be subject to an extirpation of the sphincters. The issue is if they're comfortable doing it. I mean, how many people are comfortable doing a coloanal to the dentate line in a patient who's been irradiated? That's an individual decision. But I think one has to be honest with the patients and say, yes, this can be done, but not by me, or it can be done by me, and my local recurrence rate over the last 5 years is X. It's 3%, it's 13%, it's 23%, whatever it happens to be, and level with the patient.
My perception as an outsider looking at the field or talking to people these last few years is that it seems like perhaps there are a lot of people who are not having their sphincters spared across the country who maybe could if they were going to a tertiary center. I don't know if that's been quantified.
I don't know either. The best data that probably exists on that is from the American Board of Surgery. Wallace Ritchie followed up an original earlier publication from the American Board of Surgery from, I think, Ward Griffin. But the Wallace Ritchie publication, which is maybe 5 to 6 years old at this point, looked at surgeons sitting for recertification, general surgeons, of which there are about 25,000 in the U.S. And the average general surgeon at that point was doing 0.8 rectal cases per year. Well, at 0.8 cases per year, that's not a huge volume. And interestingly, even when you look at all the studies on outcome dependent on volume, whether it's Porter study from Canada or whether it's Holmdahl study from Sweden or Simmons from California or any of the studies through New York, through Maryland, Pennsylvania, a lot of database studies have been done. Most surgeons are doing just a case or two or three per year at most, even in these studies. And even in some of the studies, the so-called high volumes, maybe 5 to 10 cancers in a year, which is not a high volume. I mean, my department this year, if you annualize what we've done year to date, we're looking at over 150 rectal cancers this year. Very different volumes and, you know, obviously potentially different outcomes. But what hasn't been quantified is how many of those patients with distal third lesions. You figure overall there's 45,000 rectal cancers, give or take, new rectal cancers in the year. They're not necessarily in equal thirds, and probably half of those are in the distal third of the rectum, and the other half are distributed in the middle and upper two-thirds. So say it's just a guess, 20 to 25,000 lower third cancers. Nobody's said how many of those people get an abdominal perineal excision. I don't know that there is a way to know. There probably is, but I don't know it.